The US is looking into $24 billion social commerce spent this year, which means a 20% growth over 2019. There will be in the US something like 77 million people will have purchased through a social platform, which will lead to, in 2023, as per latest stats, we will look into the US to reach over 100 million people which do social commerce in particular.
I'm Steven Spears, and this is
The Future.
The Future of the Future of Customer Engagement
and Experience
Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. As always, we're presented by thefutureofcommerce.com, your source for everything customer engagement and experience. Go ahead and bookmark the site now for all of that hiding in the bedroom holiday reading you're going to be doing over the next couple weeks. After the episode, be sure to check out the show notes as well for a link to our favorite article of the week. For this episode of the Commerce Reimagined series, we explore social commerce. What is it? Social commerce is the process of selling products directly on social media. The entire shopping experience, from product discovery and research to the checkout process, takes place right on a social media platform. You could spot that water bottle you didn't know you needed as you're scrolling your feed, click buy, and then once you make your purchase, you can go back to that passive-aggressive recipe post your mother-in-law tagged you in. To help us understand more about social commerce and why we should be aware of it for our business, it made sense to get the perspective of someone who's been in the space for a while and works at a social network with over 3 billion users.
My name is Kai Hertzberger. I'm a group director at Facebook running commerce for the Dutch-speaking markets and for EMEA.
I was excited to get to talk to this topic with you even more whenever we discussed that before Facebook, you even did time in America Online. So this fact that you've basically been in the internet for forever now makes you even more interesting to talk to social commerce.
Well, thanks so much, Steven. Yes, I've definitely grayed out over the last 20 years. So at least I still have hairs on my hat, but they literally went from blonde into gray.
What is that kind of shift that you've seen looked like? Because I mean, when you picture America Online to where we are now, that is night and day differences.
It definitely is a night and day difference, but at the end, nothing has changed so much from a pure marketing and sales perspective, because the fundamental guidelines and structures are still the same that we operate in. The one thing which has really changed is technology and the rise of mobile in particular. We will see also over the coming years, definitely also another shift, which is AI and VR technology taking over potentially from the mobile piece in particular. But other than that, not so much change. I think the one thing I want to point out is there has been a rise of touch points definitely for marketeers to look into. And there has been definitely a rise of competition from a company perspective, because you now have to look into more competitors in your industry and you have to look into many more touch points that you have, in particular coming from digital channels, which make it sometimes a bit harder to measure and sometimes make it harder also to stick out.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the more options is great for your end consumer, but that also presents a whole new challenge for a merchant of now you have to give people a reason to choose you out of the whole mess.
That's right. However, the purpose, so I always call brand purpose because I always have a hard time differentiating between brand and performance marketing. Because from a pure end consumer perspective, the end consumer will not differentiate if the end consumer has seen a brand ad or a performance ad from a company on the product. So I think the fundamental thing that we have to look into is putting people first again, which is sometimes a bit lost in the marketing space. Plus additionally, what is now getting more and more complicated, not so much you as a merchant, but as in the whole sphere of kind of the multiple touch points that you have is friction. Because friction is the biggest challenge that I see for marketeers and salespeople and category managers to get away on it, and in particular to address that. So For example, there's latest stats from the US, which are looking into opportunity costs from friction, which is $213 billion, just kind of in 1 year, as an opportunity cost. If you take that for EMEA, for example, where I'm responsible for, we are talking about 86 billion euros opportunity costs, which means things like if your app loads, or if your app load time is too much, people will definitely move away. Mm-hmm. That's why it's also so important kind of putting emphasis on your purpose. So pretty much on your kind of brand building.
So how does social commerce then, since that's really what we're honing in on today, how does that help remove friction?
Well, the question is always, does it directly remove friction? Because it's not necessarily like the silver bullet directly. It's more that you as a merchant need to work together with, in particular, the social platforms which are out there. The one thing is, well, there are two ways of thinking about that. One is you need to identify the consumers that you're really working with, that you communicate with, that you target to. And the second one is thinking about the way how you put your assortment in front of those people. And by doing those two things, it's in particular looking into customer journeys, both from an end consumer perspective, but also as a customer journey from a pure B2B perspective. So if you work with your logistics partners, with your warehousing team and so on, is reducing the time of delivery in particular. And we know that social commerce is definitely something which has been on the rise. Just taking a couple of US numbers out for 2020. So the US is looking into 24 billion social commerce spent this year. Wow. Which means a 20% growth over 2019. And there will be in the US something like 77 million people will have purchased through a social platform in particular, which will lead to in 2023, as per latest stats, we will look into the US to reach over 100 million people which do social commerce in particular. I think for me, just on social commerce, it's not only the conversion which needs to happen, from a merchant perspective to really drive GMV. It's also the thing to prepare the conversion, which is like the pre-sale initiatives, as well as the post-sale initiatives. So things like communication or customer service initiatives or loyalty things do happen after the conversion, because you don't want to lose that one person which has purchased your brand or your product or your service. Mm-hmm. That's why for me, social commerce is not only like limit to the conversion happening on the social platforms. It is also how you're going to communicate as a brand, as a merchant, as a service, in particular on social platforms, and not let people go once you had the initial touch point with that person.
That's interesting, because I always think of it as the, you know, social commerce is how do you get that transaction through a social platform? But as you're putting it, that's just one little piece of the entire situation.
Yeah, that's right. So I think like there's another buzzword out there, which is conversational commerce, right? So I think for me, social commerce and the conversational commerce is one thing together, because there's no one marketing tactic on just driving conversion. You need to think the whole funnel from acquisition to purchase to repurchase, and to not lose in particular people. So if you're coming, for example, from the telecom and communication market, you need to think about also churn reduction in the sense of once you have won a customer, how do you do churn prevention on top of definitely kind of doing upsales with other products that you have in your portfolio. Hmm.
So then what kind of benefits can you find by using social commerce to address these things?
Well, there's definitely one from a Facebook perspective, it's people. So you know the person behind the purchase in particular, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like a 1-2-3 number that you have in your tracking system. It's really like a person you can identify with, which makes it even like somehow harder, but also easier to do personalization at scale and to emphasize on really kind of marketing communication and not focusing too much on that one piece. So normally what we see is clients are focusing too much on advertising and not taking the sheer amount of communication tactics, because advertising is only also one small spot in the whole communication area that the merchant has to offer the products and services across the different channels, and in particular on social commerce. The additional thing where merchants do have the advantage of social platforms like ours is you have a one-to-one communication piece, which is not only through the feed or story capabilities, but also through the integration of messaging products like Messenger or WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. The additional thing is that you directly get input on if a creative and a verbal statement works. So you don't need to wait, in particular in digital and social platforms, to wait another week or so to get really kind of the outcome of an advertising campaign that you have run. Mm-hmm. You're getting the direct, so you're getting real-time data right away and can adjust your marketing strategies, but also your business strategies. I think that is really kind of an advantage that I see from using social platforms.
Yeah, and you mentioned how great it is that you have people who you can understand better who they are and get a little more information about. That's a very interesting topic today, the tracking and managing of personal data.
It is definitely a hard topic. And it's something that Facebook is definitely best of breed. If I look into kind of the global thing, now I need to say I'm employed with Facebook, but generally if I'm taking also a neutral space and I have spent some time also with like large players in that field is, I think the thing that we do best is taking the personal data serious, right? So our CEO and founder said 2 years back at F8 at our developers conference, if we look into forward the internet of the future, it will be definitely more privacy oriented. And you see that also now with COVID-19, the pandemic, but also like the regulations happening in the different countries and regions. Data is the, I would say, the holy grail to success in the future. And sometimes what marketeers do need to understand is that first level data is the most important one. So clients, merchants do have the best data set themselves. They not necessarily need the data points from digital platforms like ours or any of our kind of market competitors as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a fundamental shift which needs to happen in the head. The consumer has already done that. So we as consumers have already done that. But I think it's a bit like challenged in the heads of marketeers and companies in particular. Mm-hmm. Which is again driving friction, right? So if you don't get it away in your head, it stands in front of you and you're trying to find ways around, and the way around that might be not the right one.
Interesting. Yeah. You already have that level of trust and transparency with the platform. So when this suggestion pops up or this vendor appears, they're already somewhat in my realm of trust. So it's easier for me to make those decisions.
Right. And the one thing you need to bear in mind is, so advertising and communication is not necessarily always the first touch point a consumer has, right? So consumers normally, to the majority of the extent, have visited your website or have kind of downloaded your app already and have kind of first initial contact with you. So what we know is, for example, from the messaging space is that 89% of consumers expect brands to respond within 24 hours. So if I, as a consumer, have already done the outreach, I'm expecting with you, and I have given you the permission on the privacy side of things to work with kind of my data, at least. So at least with my name and kind of contact with my first or last name, whatever is in the messaging platform, to kind of respond. But funnily, what we see, and that's also like the social commerce piece where I said social commerce and conversational commerce do need to get hand in hand, is 57% of businesses globally can't be contacted by social media. So also we have huge numbers already, right? And I stated the ones from the US, there's more than 50% of businesses which are in the world don't have a social media presence. I think that that's a missed opportunity somehow. And that's where definitely merchants, or like as we call them always, clients, do have to invest into the future.
Speaking of the future, how important are the new upcoming AR and VR features in social shopping?
It's already there. So it's nothing you can prepare now. It's already there, right? So think about also during pandemic, what has started. So we know that, for example, 51% took a virtual real estate tour by looking at real estates. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing on AR, VR technology that has been used. So it's not us kind of wearing the glasses and then being somewhere else. It's more kind of that technology is already there to give people the ability to do that. Or think about also during the pandemic, 79% tried telemedicine. And potentially there was not a real doctor behind that. Mm. So that's kind of the first impression that we've seen through technology and things which are not in our hands evolving in particular and do that. We've just started also cooperations with one of the largest sunglass manufacturer and producer and brand globally, and kind of using AR, VR technology to kind of put your glasses on, right? So what is fitting to your face? In particular, having my face, which is a bit larger, and I have a big nose. So sometimes that brand doesn't necessarily fit to my nose, right? So, but using that AR, VR technology and the filters around that is kind of helping to definitely put it on.
These are fascinating possibilities to me, and of course, encouraging to know that I can try glasses on and save the fumbling around and awkwardness of trying them on in the store. So as we wrap up here, do you think that discovery commerce, do you think that social commerce looks different for different types of merchants, like a digital first company versus a legacy type company?
No, I think though, well, there's one thing I want to mention is don't fear technology. Technology is consumer behavior and will always be consumer behavior. Don't see technology as a limiting factor for doing your business. So there's always the discussion around digital born companies are better in doing social commerce and discovery commerce in particular. And more traditional companies do have the challenge of really moving digital first. I think there are definitely companies which have done great in that one. So there's one which is top of mind for me, which is Yves Rocher. So if they have started 18 months back shifting from a brick and mortar company into a digital first company, and what they have seen since April this year, they have seen a 10 times growth in some of the markets for online across global websites because they were prepared. Which is coming back to the notion, you shouldn't differentiate between traditional and or retail and e-commerce at the end. And that's why, for example, I changed my title or I took not by accident, by purpose, out of my title, something out. So as I said, I'm a group director for DACH and EMEA for commerce. If you wouldn't look into my title, I took the E out, e-commerce. Yeah. Because for me, e-commerce, if you differentiate between e-commerce and retail, you're already not operating in a people-first-centric view. Because the consumer will... If I would ask you, what have you purchased for Christmas? Have you bought it online or have you bought it in the retail store? In January, you might not be able to answer me that one anymore because you have lost the receipt. You don't know where you have bought that. And that's why things like omnichannel, multi-channel strategies really need to get hand in hand. It needs to be that departments like retail departments and e-commerce departments need to come together. And they need to work against one KPI and not two conflicting KPIs, which is also a thing to look into supply chain and value chain, because what we see with companies which are operating or which say they do operate in a multi-channel perspective, they still have two warehouses. That's why, for example, they can't deliver as quick on e-commerce. And they might not be able to deliver also as quick if there is a demand in the retail store. So that's why you need to take the notion of multi-channel into really kind of thinking people first and thinking commerce first and not differentiating between retail and e-commerce.
With a better understanding now of what social commerce is and why we should care, it made sense to then take a look under the hood and see how existing commerce platforms can help with social commerce. For that, we talked to Rick Hobbs from SAP.
Thanks, Stephen. So I'm a chief product owner in the commerce organization with a real focus on social commerce and really enabling social commerce for all of our commerce platforms in order to really help our merchants transact and really make themselves present in those spaces.
I think the idea of social commerce has been out there for a few years now. So what's making this so important to look at now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the platforms themselves have been used for commerce activities for a reasonable amount of time, mm-hmm. be it through the kind of one-to-one selling of, you've got a secondhand thing that you want to sell and make it available, all the way through to the brands using it for, not only overt commerce activities, but also more the kind of stealth campaigns and the kind of, very exclusive campaigns that are available to a limited number of users. I think what's really changing, in the last 2 years, is the platforms themselves are really gaining the capability for commerce. So not only just get the product out there, but also wanting to now enable people to transact on those platforms as well. And in order to really make that easy for the merchants to use, the e-commerce platforms need to evolve with that to embrace the fact that these are now true channels in their own right and not just a kind of form of advertising, banner advertising or whatever it might be. And I think that's really the change that we've seen probably in the last 18 months or so.
So is it a matter of really just extending your business's e-commerce into social, or is it almost its own animal?
I view it as its own animal. I think as with any channel that you transact on, you have to kind of gear your campaign, gear your product, gear the way that you're positioning that product to that particular channel. And I think what makes social a unique channel in that regard is its ability to really personalize the audiences that you expose to your product, or also, which audiences actually discover your products as well. And, that can be a both a blessing and a curse, I would say, in some ways, because, it really enables you to hone in on the right types of consumer, the right types of customer. But you also have to make sure that you kind of present your products and position them in such a way that you can discover new audiences as well. Because it's not just about speaking to the loyal, it's about, gaining new customers, new followers of your brand.
What added benefits are there of having that integration of what you're doing with your commerce platform into the social as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the core of any strong retailer or brand or anyone that's selling product is the product. And so, the e-commerce platforms that, a lot of these organizations run, they are that kind of golden master record of the customer view of a product. And so in order to be able to really maximize the use of that information, you want a really tight and well-engineered integration between your commerce platform and your social platform. So if you make a change to your product, if you make a change to, the imagery of the product, the price, the way it's described, anything like that, you want to reflect that straight out onto the social platform as soon as possible. And you also want to make sure that the transaction or the potential for the transaction remains as high as possible. So you don't, for example, want to say, okay, we've got this product, it's a really popular product, it's in stock, come and buy it right now. Mm. If that's, 24 hours out of date and you've now sold through that particular stock, you don't want a whole bunch of messaging out on social saying, come to our site, because you're just going to get disappointed customers. And that's actually pretty much one of the worst things you can have. So you need to keep that information fresh, relevant, and up to date as it would be on your commerce site out into the social network. And the only way to do that is to have a really, really strong partnership between your social platform and the e-commerce platforms in order to be able to create that tight integration.
It's funny, a little off topic, I know, but I was just thinking for Christmas shopping, even it's a little invasive, but it might be the best way to find out what I should buy my wife for Christmas is scroll her Facebook feed and see what things are popping up as suggestions on there. Cause those are probably relatively around what she might like, you know, some of them may be way off, but it might give you a better idea of what somebody would be looking for when they're shopping.
Yeah, or you may find the products that she's buying you for Christmas because that's what she's been looking for, and then that'll ruin the surprise. But I think that
funny. Yeah, that's true.
But that highlights one of the challenges with personalization is that, you know, none of these systems necessarily know what context you're looking for products in. So, you know, if you are buying a gift for someone else, you know, for your wife, then, you know, you will go through that sort of process of finding the product. You'll hopefully buy something really nice and, you know, it'll be a great surprise. But actually, because you bought, a particular product for her, doesn't mean you're then interested in all of the recommendations and kind of retargeting campaigns that are driven off the back of that. You've bought the present. Now you're back into what you're interested in. And that's one of the challenges of any kind of personalization, I think, still something that, you know, there is some ways to go, and the AI and so on around that is becoming increasingly good in terms of understanding people's context, but there's still that kind of, you know, it doesn't have enough information necessarily to know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah. I can see now I'd be getting things for like fuzzy slippers and necklaces, and I don't buy that on the regular, sadly. but yeah, no, you mentioned the AI and all. I'm curious, that is something though that is becoming better as we look into the future of more machine learning and things being able to separate if this was a one-time purchase or things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think AI is, I mean, it's a big area, not just for social, but also for what we're doing here on the SAP commerce side of things as well. And, the ability to understand what products to position in front of what consumers and in what context, i.e. when in the journey, is something that we're doing a lot of work on in our own platforms. And part of the opportunity that we see is the ability to also take some of that AI and actually start to use that in terms of how you'd position those products within your social channel as well. So, for example, if you know that you are selling very strongly in certain categories or on certain products, then those would make the a very obvious campaign that you want to start to actually run on social, because, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to make a decision as to which products, which categories you're going to position there. So being able to take that and then actually make actionable actions from that intelligence within the social platform that says, okay, well, at the press of a button, we're going to launch a campaign for that product or that category. And then we'll actually start to measure the response of that on the commerce platform itself, so that we can, you know, then use that as additional data for our own, how we then use the AI on the merchant's platform or in any other channels as well. So that's, I think, a really kind of interesting area where we're looking at, to invest a lot to really bring that benefit to the merchants.
Why is it so important then to address this now?
I think that the main thing from my perspective is that the world of retail is moving at an astronomical rate right now, particularly with the pandemic and everything that's gone on around that and the pressure that's put on traditional bricks and mortar retailers. Mm-hmm. And I think that every retailer has to just understand that, you know, moving with the world is incredibly important. You know, it's not going to stand still for you. And what we're trying to do with our products is to try and enable merchants and retailers and, you know, anyone that's trying to sell online to be able to move as quickly as the world is moving around them and make sure they're best positioned to be able to do that. So, you know, I think, you know, embrace these new channels, embrace these new technologies, because they are here to stay and there will be new ones in the future, you know, as we get into, you know, even more kind of, you know, mobile focused, you know, capabilities like, you know, the AR and VR as well. Mm-hmm. You know, those are going to come and, you know, they will, they're not going to be the be all and end all, but they're going to raise new opportunities. And, you know, if you're there to be able to take advantage of them and you have the tools to take advantage of them, then, you know, it's there for the taking.
Thanks again to Kai and Rick for joining. If you want to learn more about the work they're doing, be sure to check out the links in the show notes. Also, if this was useful for you, be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you can receive notifications as new episodes of the Commerce Reimagined series are released. If you enjoyed it as well, you can always leave us a rating and review to help others discover the show and let us know how we're doing. I'm Stephen Spears, and this is the Future of Customer Engagement and Experience podcast. See you next time.